Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast, our last of the year. Our special guest this week is Bob Bryan. I would safely say the best doubles player of all time, partnered with his twin brother Mike, of course, closing in on age 40, still playing, still near the top of the sport, trying to get back to the business of winning some Grand Slams. We have a very nice conversation, which is almost redundant when it comes to the Bryans. Clearly, the most media-friendly athletes you could ever hope to be around, and Bob talks very openly about his relationship with Mike, what the year holds in store, how an Amazon project that I thought had tremendous potential may have lost some momentum, but hopefully that gets back on track. Nice conversation. Talk a little Federer-Nadal and who's better at doubles, and project 2018 both for the Bryan brothers and for the sport of tennis more generally. So nice conversation to wrap up the year. We will do some more podcasts to start 2018. But here for the last podcast of 2017, Bob Bryan.
Hey, John. How you doing?
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
No problem. Where are you calling from?
In New York. Headed out tomorrow. Where are you?
Down here in Florida. Going to Australia on the 4th, so I still got some couple weeks.
Yeah, you got 2 weeks to to be a family man.
When are you going? Like the 10th or?
Yeah, I think the 11th.
Yeah, 11th, cool.
The what do you do these next 2 weeks?
Well, I got one of my kids' birthdays and a Christmas at our house, so we're kind of getting ready for that, but just sneaking in some tennis and some weights, and then. Yeah, there's a lot of guys down here right now, so we're getting some sets in, and trying to juggle it all.
Who are you playing with? Who's Kevin Anderson?
We got Rogier and Takao tomorrow.
Doubles guys.
A couple guys that are about 50 in the world. You probably know Robert Lindstedt is across the street from me. A kid, William Blumberg, who he's number one in college.
Yeah,
he's
from up here, from Connecticut. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really impressive. He's been staying here for the last few days. Yeah. So
it's like a little doubles artist colony down there.
Trying to convert Blumberg to a doubles specialist, but I don't think he's going to do it. He's a singles horse.
Ooh, that's an interesting. Save that thought. That's an interesting. It's an interesting question. Give us the give us a state of the union. What's going on in Bryanland?
Bryanland. Well, we're just trying to. Keep going. You know, we're obviously not satisfied with how last year went. There's a few things going on, but everyone's kind of got their head in the right place. We're motivated. We got a trainer on tap on hand, keeping us healthy, and we're hoping to give next year a full shot. And I mean, the dream is to finish number one. That's our goal. We're not really happy unless we're up there. So it's a little bit frustrating being 2, 3, 4, 5. So, you know, we are still playing because we do have hopes that we could hold up another Grand Slam trophy.
One of the reasons so many of us are fond of you is your unstinting honesty. But if any of these are inappropriately tough, you'll defer. But can I ask you, what's how do you sort of characterize, you know, you guys are closing in on 4-0, and it's been a hell of a run, and been 20 years. But how do you characterize sort of the state of your relationship with Mike these days?
Well, I mean, we're twins, so we're always got this this bond that's unbreakable. We are tight as ever. There are obviously the frustrations that creep in. Either he's frustrated with me that I'm not putting in the work with the kids. I'm not devoting 110% like I used to. But I try to assure him, even though I'm juggling a lot of hats, that I am still putting the hours in. And that was almost sometimes hard to communicate because I was in Florida, he was in California. Right. So I could only say so much. Now he's out here during this off season, and we're doing the work together, which always feels good. And we're kind of I don't know. We're just we're doing all the stuff that we needed to do, but as a team. And so when we go out there, we'll both feel like the other guys paid his dues, which gives us a little bit of confidence. There's no second guessing the brother. But look, I mean, we love each other. At the end of the day, doesn't matter what happens on the court or in the locker room. We're always going to be there for each other. We're always each other's best friend. But it definitely helps a relationship when we are holding up the trophy, that's for sure.
The twin ESP thing that people talk about, I've tried to write about. It's very hard to characterize. That's still a thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, when Mike's hurting, I'm hurting. Obviously, you know, it's been tough the last few years. A few personal things, a couple injuries, and you know, when the vibe's not there and we're not completely happy, right, it definitely affects our results on the court.
But so, I mean, like the telepathic stuff. I mean, the stories you guys have of like you'll pick up your phone a continent away to call each other, and you'll both call each other at the same time. I mean, some of that stuff is almost like supernatural.
Yeah,
that still exists.
That still exists. I mean, I freak out. Even someone was showing me a video the other day how our feet move in unison. I don't watch a lot of tape, but you know, I was kind of just interested in checking it out. It's it is wild. We'll call each other at the same time. He'll choose a song for a video that I'll choose the same song. We were once in a furniture store at the same time picking out the same couch on opposite coasts, which was wild. So, yeah, and then he'll write a thank you note to someone, and we'll pretty much write the exact same sentences. So that stuff is trippy. I don't even realize how it works, but I guess it's just all the experiences we've had together, just sharing life. So, but it is wild.
There were talks at one point last year of doing a project. You know, Amazon has entered this sport, especially seems to be a fondness for global sports, and entered this sphere. There was talk of a Bryan Brothers project. Are you allowed to say? Did that take hold?
That was looking pretty good. And then a couple of the guys that were high up that were spearheading the project, I think, got fired. And Mike had a lot of meetings with these guys out in California. They were California-based. He played tennis with the guys. It was looking good. I mean, it was a follow-up to the Djokovic project, and it's gone pretty quiet since those guys have moved on. Who knows if it gets resuscitated, but as of right now, it is not looking good. So you won't see a camera crew following us next year.
So my theory is that IVF, because of fertility issues, there are more twins than ever.
Yeah.
The experiences that you've had together sort of have more currency than ever. If I were a documentarian, anything having to do with twins, especially successful in a competitive field, would be something I'd be jumping on. So if Amazon comes up short, I keep pressing. A lot of people would be interested in your story. I'll leave
who knows?
It at that.
Who knows? We'll
who
see.
Knows exactly.
But it might have been fun.
What? Let's talk some tennis. I want to talk about the doubles format, which I get the feeling that initially you guys resisted it, and then you realized, hey, this is going to let us play longer, and it's less wear and tear on the body. Are you, because the doubles format is obviously variations of it anyway, seem to be part of all these innovations. Are you still a supporter?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's lengthened everyone's careers by a little bit. The fact, you know, sometimes you're playing matches that are 40 minutes instead of a buck 15. It's just less wear and tear on the hips, everything, on the joints, especially on the hard courts. But I mean, sometimes when you fly over to Asia, you fly 24 hours getting over to Shanghai, and someone hits a let court on a 3-all point, and you lose 4-4 in a 3-all format, or you lose a super breaker. Then you're kind of scratching your head. You're saying, why did I even come over here? There wasn't even enough tennis to make it worthwhile. So, I mean, look, it's a little bit love-hate when those super breakers are going your way. And you're winning those coin flips, you're loving it. But Sometimes you can lose four or five of those in a row, and you could be saying, geez, I wish there was a third set. And a lot of times when you're the better team, you want a little more play.
Right. So, I think that's a really important point. I mean, I think that honestly is why a lot of the top guys don't mind best of five. That the bigger the sample size, the less possibility for randomness, right?
Yeah, I mean, I probably could beat Phil Ivey in one hand of poker, but you keep me out there all night with him, he's going to take all my money.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do feel comfortable in that Wimbledon format where you play three out of five sets, even no breaker in the third. We've always felt if you lose like that, you deserve to lose. So you deserve to pack your bags and go home. But there's, you know, a lot of times in the ATP format, we'll win 15 more points than a team, win a set 6-0, and then be in the locker room 3 minutes later, just, you know, scratching our head, trying to figure out how we lost. So,
what's the answer to that? Because I feel like we one thing we hear all the time these days, probably now more than ever, is the margins are so thin.
Yeah.
What does that really mean?
Especially in doubles.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
In doubles, well, you know, you got a guy on top of the net. Guys in doubles now are playing a lot closer to the net. The rackets are more powerful. The serves are coming a lot faster. It's very hard to get a return precise by the net man. So it's very hard to break serve. So if you do lose serve, you don't have any time to catch up. And you could be going home quick. So you wish there was sometimes a little bit longer to play and a little more tennis involved. But, a lot of teams can win in a doubles tournament. I feel like going into a tournament, there could be 15 or 20 teams that can get by and win the tournament. I think in singles, that's, it's a handful of guys that going into a Grand Slam that could get out of there with the win.
Right.
So, yeah, a little bit harder to be consistent in the doubles with the format, but it does give tournament directors a little more flexibility with the schedule. If they know a match is going to go an hour and 15, it's going to be under an hour and 30. That was why it happened, is to get more doubles matches on center court and not have those doubles matches bleed into a TV time singles match. I'm not sure if that's happened, but definitely more singles guys are playing. The money's gotten better in the sport. And, a lot of the singles guys do like to jump out there. And, it pays a lot of bills.
I always thought you guys were both very game about that. You're cool with that, aren't you?
Having singles guys out there.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever's best for the entertainment value. I know the fans love seeing Rafa Nadal on the court. Doesn't matter if it's singles or doubles. They love seeing Dimitrov out there. They want to see the stars on the court as much as possible. So having those guys out there helps tournaments. Doesn't matter when they're out there, practice court or whatever. So I really think that's helping the entertainment value, and it's helping doubles. I think doubles is being played at a very high level right now, just with the mix of styles. Just a lot of talent out there. So I think that's a good thing.
Better doubles player, Federer or Nadal?
Nadal is he's pretty feisty up there at the net. He does a lot of moving. He's really close to the net.
Right.
I do think Federer's a more natural volleyer, but he's a little less intense with his feet. He's pretty smooth. I think doubles is very fast twitch. And you do have to be super engaged. I've seen Federer play doubles matches when, he's kind of cruising and it's got him in trouble. I've seen him play matches where he makes it look super easy. So, I think Nadal, a little more feisty net player, but Federer is definitely the classic, beautiful doubles player.
I still maintain Nadal at the net, for as often as we've seen him play, still criminally underrated. I mean,
super quick hands.
Those Olympics, he was the best player on the court most of the time.
Super quick hands. He's got great instincts. He definitely knows what he's doing up there. He's not a serve and volley. He likes to stay back and rip the forehand.
Right.
But when he's up there and close to the net, he's not missing volleys. And you see that in the singles. He when he decides to come in, he's very efficient.
Someone asked me this week. They said if when Federer's done with singles, why doesn't he stick around as a doubles specialist? And I think as a fellow parent, my first you know this as well as I do. You don't spend any more time on the road away from your kids than you have to.
No. You won't see a lot of those guys.
I don't think we're seeing Federer third on waiting. But having said that,
definitely not.
What is sort of the state of the double specialist these days?
The double specialist has been streamlined to a very professional brand of player. There's only 30 of these guys making money, and they're all, no one's going out, no one's partying. Everyone has a coach. Everyone has a trainer. Everyone's eating right. It's changed a lot in the last 20 years where, you know, there was a little more of the journeyman doubles player that could probably enjoy life a little more, have a social, have a social life out on the tour and just cruise, pick up some checks. But now, there's not enough jobs. You got the singles players jumping in, and guys are battling for their livelihood. So doesn't matter if they're 30 or 40 in the world. These guys are all, everyone's doing it the right way. There's no players cruising out there anymore.
Best doubles player under 30?
Best doubles player under 30? Kontinen and Piers. I think they're both under 30. Both guys have a lot of power. Super live arms. And, they're just playing a power brand of doubles right now.
I'm gonna cheat and look up how old Ouz Abel is. 26.
Yeah, who's that? Is that Kontinen?
No, 26? Pierre Ouz Abel.
Oh, Herbert. Well, he's a hybrid. He's a guy that I could see easily top 50 in the world in singles. And whenever he steps on the doubles court, he's going to be a threat because he bombs a serve.
That service motion is unbelievable.
Flashy return. Yeah, he really bends his back. I don't know how that back's going to hold up for another 10 years, but it's a nasty serve to face.
Let me ask you, you and your brother were among the players who were at the Jack Nicklaus event earlier this month. So first of all, I feel like one of the great stories that hasn't been told is Jack Nicklaus's grass court facility and his passion for tennis. You've played on his courts a bunch of times, I take it?
Yeah, I met Jack probably 6 or 7 years ago. He has, weekend tournaments at his house. He loves tennis. So passionate about it. He's got three of the most immaculate grass courts that you've ever seen. They're lit. They play at night there. I played in this holiday tournament. We ended up taking home the trophy.
Well done.
And became good friends with him. He's been to the Delray Beach tournament. He's come to Wimbledon multiple times to watch us play. He's sat through four-hour doubles matches and just become great friends. Him and Barbara text, after every one of our matches, and we decided to partner up for like a charity event. And we had donors that were paying $50,000 for 2 days, a day of tennis and a day of golf. And we raised a lot of money. I mean, Mike and I have done an event, a charity event for our foundation for the last 10 years, and we raised, our split was more than four or five times what we've ever done. And that's just partnering with a legend like Jack. People got to come to his house. They got to play golf with Thomas and Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler. And, on the tennis side, I got Serena and Andy Murray to show up. And then, we had Jack Sock and Anderson, Haas, Courier, Opelka, Blake, Bouchard. We had a phenomenal lineup. So everyone left just buzzing about the event. And hopefully that will be just the first year, and we can carry this on for more years.
Well, we'll have to we'll link that. More than $1 million to the Brian Bros Foundation and the Nicklaus Children's Healthcare Foundation.
Yeah,
I remember Serena sort of casually mentioned this once. I'm like, I can't believe no one picked it. She would prepare for Wimbledon not by playing a tune-up event on the grass in Europe, but by going to Jack Nicklaus's house. So that's a great sports story.
Jack's had a ton of people over there training. Raonic was there. Training for Wimbledon. I know Anderson goes up there a bunch. He lives in Delray Beach. But like I said, those courts, I mean, Jack knows what he's doing with the grass. I mean, they roll them and cut them every day. Yeah, it's amazing.
Is he a player?
he's a good player. He's got some injuries now, so he's not whipping the forehand and bombing the serve anymore. But he takes care of his end, and when the ball comes to him, he's pretty efficient, and he's a good doubles player. But he's not prancing around the singles court anymore.
The fact that we're talking about Jack Nicklaus bombing a serve makes me smile. I want to ask you about media for a second.
Yeah.
You guys, I think the first time we ever spoke was one of the very, very first tennis events I ever covered, which was a Davis Cup in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And I believe you guys were, I don't know, I think you were still at Stanford and we were practice partners, to be honest.
We might have just turned pro like a month onto the tour.
This would have been like, I think, 98?
98, exactly.
But anyway, you guys were, it was like a Pfister Hotel, and you guys were, oh, these kids are cool. And, a lot of players, I think, start very accessible and sort of cheerful. And then I think very understandably, the life and the repetition and getting asked the same question, and sometimes things break negatively, and it makes people a bit jaded. You and your brother never had that. I mean, from day one all the way through, winning slams, losing slams, there's always been a real sort of media friendliness and candor, and I think it's deeply appreciated. But I'm wondering, is that who you are? Did someone sit you down and explain, treat people with respect? I mean, where did that come from? Go ahead.
I gotta say my parents instilled a lot of that into us. So just that giving back, being grateful, treating people with respect. I remember we would usually take Mondays off of tennis after playing a tournament on the weekends, and my dad would sit down and make us write 10 thank you letters every Monday each. And whether that was to tournament directors or to people that we saw on the weekend, he just kind of instilled some people skills. And, look, media is what makes this tour work. It's the media and the fans. If the media is not reporting your sport in good light, that's gonna hurt ticket sales. It's gonna hurt the whole tour. We've been lucky where we haven't had, doubles doesn't have the intense spotlight of singles, so we don't get a lot of negative attention. So we haven't had to deal with that as much. I mean, yeah, when you lose a match and you see some stuff on Twitter is one thing, but we haven't had incredibly negative articles written about us, which some of the singles guys have to deal with. So they might put their guard up a little more. I've seen a lot of players change over the years, starting off very carefree and loose, and then they become a little more protected later in their careers, which I understand.
Then they come back around.
Everybody
retires.
They retire?
Yeah.
But
then towards the end, it's back to everybody's.
It's an amazing friends. Transformation. Once they retire and they put their rackets in the closet, they're just so carefree.
Exactly.
I
always feel like you want to be careful not to discount the tennis itself, because you guys are, I would think you could very easily make a case, the most talented doubles players ever, the most accomplished doubles players ever. So I don't want to take anything away from the tennis and the ability itself, but I think you guys both really benefited, you and Mike, from having each other. And you could
have
a bad match, and you guys could have it out, and sometimes even physically smash guitars on each other's knees, and you still knew you'd wake up the next morning and you'd be entering the next tournament together. But I'm also wondering what are sort of the complications of family? I mean, if Mike said tomorrow, I'm done with tennis, I want to go, work for a startup.
Yeah.
Are you going to play with another partner? I mean, what are the complications of having such a close relationship?
Yeah, I mean, that question, I'd probably shut it down. I'm not sure if I retire today, Mike would shut it down. Him not having kids and being a little more independent, he might go the business wise and grab a partner and try to make some money. I don't know. Who knows?
You'd be cool with that.
But just having our relationship, we're pretty loyal guys, and we're never going to just turn our back on each other. It's kept it so we've been able to play free. I see a lot of teams that are struggling They're just trying. They're playing really safe. They don't want their partner to go looking for someone else the next week. Yeah, we've never badmouthed each other in the locker room. You see a lot of guys have a bad match and then they start, badmouthing their partner and saying how well they played, how poorly the other guy played. So we've kept it pretty tight. And obviously being healthy and it's helped our consistency, our longevity. We've been able to play, almost a couple thousand matches.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's wild looking back on it, you know.
So about maybe 10 years ago, nah, probably less, probably 8 years ago, I don't know if you remember, I did a long story on you guys for Sports Illustrated, and without any sort of indication that it was extraordinary, I think you guys both told me a story about how you got in a fight in a mall and I don't know, someone threw a bowl of soup on the other one. Your sunglasses bounced in a woman's plate.
And then
you guys went and practiced in the afternoon together like it was nothing. What was your last, what's your last confrontation of that scale?
Our last blowout was in Vienna. We had just lost in Antwerp in a match we should have won. The indoor season's always a little tough because there's no Grand Slam on the horizon, so you're just kind of grinding. And we arrive in Vienna, and we're playing cards in the airport waiting for some bags that were delayed. And I remember we were playing hearts, and I won a hand, and I said something to Mike, and he slapped me on the head. I'm like, hey, man, if you do that again, we're going to have some problems. And 5 minutes later, I laid down a hand, won it, and he slapped me on the head. And so I just tackled in the middle of the restaurant in Vienna, and our coach ended up breaking us up. And we got into it again in the parking lot, went to the hotel. I said, you don't ever do that again. He's like, I'm going home. And so he said he was going home. He packed his bags. I packed my bags. We were done for the season. And somehow my wife intervened, called him, told him, oh, Bob really loves you. He doesn't want you to go. And so we weren't able to communicate to each other, but we had someone came in the middle and smoothed it over. And so we ended up kind of going to each other's room, having room service. We didn't say one word to each other, but we just kind of had this healing period. And then we ended up finishing the season. Not well, but we ended up finishing.
What was the year on this?
What's that? Is it this year?
Okay, can I just say, we all love Amazon. We all love Amazon Prime. Yeah. This is the future of U.S. economics is wrapped in this company. The fact that they were not rolling, the fact that they seem to be deferring this documentary is criminal. If you had video of two guys in their late 30s, most accomplished people in the world at what they do, having it out in a hotel lobby, that's video gold. But I think that, I mean, to your point, it's a serious point though. I think that goes to the there's a baseline level of we can have this kind of dispute and I don't have to worry that he's going to break up with me and go play with Daniel Nestor next week.
Yeah, there's that, and there's also the fact of just kind of letting the steam out. We're very intense. We're perfectionists. We hate to lose more than we like to win. And I was going through, I was doing a Q&A about Daniel Nestor and what's the match that stands out. And all I could think about were the losses. I couldn't remember actually one match that I beat him.
Really?
I know I've beat him 30 times, but all I could remember was the heartache. So we do hate to lose. And when we do lose, it's difficult for, multiple days. A lot of times it's hard to even sleep or whatever. But where were we going with this one?
Really? No, I mean, that's interesting to hear because I always think that their players' reactions to defeat really ranges. I mean, these guys tell these stories about Federer, like he'll lose a Grand Slam final and by dinner time he's like cracking jokes and has a smile on his face. And you hear about other players who it takes them a week before they, whether it's Serena or, I mean, there are other players where defeat can really keep them down for days, if not weeks.
Yeah, I mean, look, with the family now, I have to bounce back quick. The kids force me to. They don't even understand what the matches are all about. So they can add humor to the whole situation and make it a lot easier. Probably with Mike, it's a little bit tougher. Just being being solo. But look, yeah, I mean, I think you're it's a little awkward or weird if you're not hating the losses. You know, I hate guys that walk off smiling. I like to just be purely beat. You know, if a team comes out and just smokes us 2-2, I can live with that, just getting purely outplayed. But knowing that I didn't put in the work, or I had it on my strings and I didn't go for it, those are the ones that keep you up at night.
The missing first serves at 5-all, or the, you know,
just knowing that you didn't. Often it comes down to the fact that you didn't do the work. You know, maybe you should have worked hard a little harder the week before. You know, usually you get paid off with the hard work, and you know, if you're a little bit lazy, it comes back and bites you.
All right, two more questions, real quick. Singles.
Who
a year from today, who's in the top five singles?
Top five for next year?
Yep. Health being the variable, of course.
Yeah, we always do a singles ranking at the beginning of the year before the Aussie Open starts.
What do you got?
We were way off this year. But
wait. So who'd you have this year?
I'm gonna say Novak. Obviously comes back strong.
Okay.
I think Zverev will be there. I'm gonna say Federer and Nadal, and hopefully Murray can bounce back from the injuries and come back strong. I'm hoping that he's healthy and ready to go, because if he is, he'll be there too.
I'm here in between us and the listeners. Here in that recovery is still a work in progress. But
I know.
But you're basically saying big four plus Zverev a year from now is a
four
top
plus
five.
Zverev. You know, obviously Nishikori if he's playing well, or Ranj. There's a lot of guys, but it's gonna be a fun year if everyone's healthy, because there's a lot of new faces. You know, with Sock being should be seated at the Aussie Open, and I think being seated is gonna help him a lot.
Like really
big guys
seated
off him.
Right.
So. Yeah, there's a lot of firepower out there on the singles tour, and this could be like a transitional year, and a lot of the new faces contending for the slams.
You do women's too, or is this men's only?
I stick with the men, but I haven't done the women's rankings yet, but I think Sharapova will be a threat to win a slam next year. I follow her on Instagram, and it looks like she's been killing it in the gym and on the court, so look for her to do some damage.
What about a recently married neighbor of yours who was at the charity event?
The recently married man at the charity event.
No, I'm talking woman.
I knew a woman.
No, I was talking Serena. Serena.
You're
talking Big John, right?
Yeah, I met her husband, and I saw her little baby, who's she's adorable. I think if Serena wants to play and she's in shape, she's obviously going to be really dangerous, and she'll be number one for sure if she's ready to go. So if she wants it, it's hers.
All right, last question. 2018 will be a successful year for Bob Bryan if blank.
For Bob Bryan and blank? And
No. Fill in the blank. I mean, for you personally, what's 2018 will be successful? A year from now, we look back on 2018. It will have been a success if what happens.
I think if we win a slam, and or finish number one, and really if we have fun. I mean, if I can bring my family on the road and have some great weeks with them, and everyone's happy and healthy, I think we'll leave 2018 very very satisfied.
Good answer. Listen, I as always appreciate it. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, sir.
Always
appreciate. Thanks for having me, John. I really appreciate it.
Time and
happy holidays.
You as well. We'll enjoy 2 weeks with your family, and we'll see you at the bottom of the planet.
All right. All the best, my friend.
You too. See you, buddy. All right. That does it for this week. Thanks to our guest, Bob Bryan. Nice conversation as always. Always appreciate talking to both Bob and Mike again. Terrifically media-friendly, accessible athletes who never turned, and it's really appreciated. You can see why they are so well-liked, quite apart from all they've achieved as a doubles team. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Jamie Lasanti. Jamie's done terrific work all year. Can I bring you on, or are you too sick?
I'm sick.
All right. We won't make you talk today, but we're going to bring you on more in 2018. Jamie's done terrific work all year, and it's fitting that she comes in off the injured list for her last podcast of the year. We appreciate all of Jamie's work. We also appreciate all of your listenership, your comments, your suggested guests, your questions. These have been fun to do. We're going to keep going in 2018 with a new palette of guests. Already some have started to line up, potentially including Marion Bartoli, who announced yesterday she'll be back in action. That does it for this week. That does it for this year. We will be back in 2018. So have a good holiday, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.